Welcome to Polycast, a Civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mean Team.
Ed Jin. With guest co-hosts
Garrett Sidzaka.
Kale.
Let me go in the garage and lock the door so my children are trying to find me. They're hunting me. Screaming in the distance, slowly getting louder. So,
I'm hiding from my children.
Welcome to episode 265. Today we are joined with Dan Quick.
What is with all the peeps out there?
Makalua.
Yeah, I was trying to sound hip with the kids again.
The Me in Team.
I've only ever been hip with the kids.
Mad Jin.
Apparently, I'm in the red corner.
Kale.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And finally, special guest host, me, Garrett Sidzaka. Welcome.
So you do realize what has just happened. Sorry, Kale, you're not a special guest.
Yeah.
Best guest.
ordinary guest.
Now, some people might recognize Tony's voice. He was one of the original Modcast co-hosts and the Modcast editor for a couple of seasons. But, Tony, it has been 188 episodes since you have been a guest on the show, which puts you at the top of the list now for the longest time between guest appearances. Congratulations to you, sir.
Nice. I'm something.
Going back further and further and trying to find somebody who's just never been on the show except for maybe the first episode.
Certainly in lead up to Civilization VI here in September and October, our aim is to have two guest co-hosts as opposed to one, and we're trying to get the return guest co-hosts on the show. Trying for that, so we're trying to keep breaking this record so I can keep bringing up statistics legitimately as opposed to illegitimately.
Oh, that's
More than legitimate statistics, not illegitimate statistics, it's true.
Practice was, of course, over at PAX West on the 3rd of September, so this is a long time ago. Old news, because they were doing it while we were recording the last episode, or just after, so it's all their fault. Bad timing on their part.
Yeah, they still don't coordinate with us. I keep trying, but they just don't pick up, you know?
Totally. Originally, Ed Beach, Den Shirk, Brian Busati, one of the Brians, and Sarah Darney, one of the assistant producers, or producer.
Assistant.
Yeah, they keep calling her assistant, but I thought she was one of the producers. Anyways, they were all supposed to be there to have a big old chat and have a great exclusive reveal at PAX West and some sort of mega panel. And then at the last second, Ed and Dennis decided that they actually had work to do and didn't show up. Something about maybe having a game that has to get released soon. I don't know. The video for the mega panel still hasn't been released, but there was other stuff released related to it. Of course, the big reveal was the fact that Congo is a sieve, but we're going to talk about that a little bit later.
Yep, that'll be next.
That'll be next, so I'm not going to bother going into that stuff.
Nerdist.com, where they essentially said, here's everything you need to know, and they condensed it into 12 minutes. I don't know, how long did the panel actually go? Was it an hour, give or take?
I don't know yet. They haven't released the video.
I think it was scheduled for an hour or so. So you've got 12 minutes. So it's from that that I picked up little bits of things. But there really wasn't anything substantively new other than what you already mentioned, which was the reveal of the Congo, which we'll get to.
Yeah. And then, of course, there was a couple interviews post. There is one by PC Gamer with Sarah and Brian, one of the Brians.
Brian Selges, designer-programmer. Yep.
Yeah, that's who they subbed in. Because both Brians were there, and that makes it slightly harder to distinguish the two. They look exactly the same. Totally.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Every Brian in the world looks the same. They're easy to get confused, you know? I thought it was Brian Reynolds for a moment.
Sure, it could have been. It definitely could have been.
It was mostly about Congo and how awesome Congo is and different play style. They did clean up some of the language of the first look video in this interview. So
yes.
Probably come back to it when we get to Congo, because there's a few things in there that actually got
clarified.
Clarified. But otherwise, it really wasn't a giant mega panel, per se, like previous ones. The usual Unstack Your Cities is, you know, gotta bring that up about a billion more times. No one's ever heard that before. active research. Yep, no one's touched on that before. Pretty much a compilation of things that people already talked about.
They talked about espionage right after active research. Had it been said before that you can go in and steal great works?
People knew about it on the forums.
Oh, okay. And there was also a mention about that you can use spies to, quote-unquote, take out all production of rivals.
Some of the spy stuff has already been seen in a variety of videos, but they still haven't done a This Is Espionage video or gameplay. There's still a fair amount around espionage that is missing.
Yeah, that Nerdist video was the first time I had seen that you could steal great works. I'm curious to find out. What do you guys think? How is that going to work? You come up next to the city and use one of your espionage actions for it? Does that unit have it now? Can you kill that unit and get it back? Or
each district has a target action for a spy. Seems to be, anyways. So I would assume if you had a theater, the spy would go there. So, I mean, espionage-wise, you can gain sources, whatever. Listening post for increasing diplomatic visibility, which we still don't quite 100% know about that. Commerce hub is for siphon funds, etc., etc. But looking at the percentages, Great Work Heist was at, like, 24% chance on 8 turns, whereas, like, siphoning funds was at 48. Listening post and gain sources were 100%. As, like, spies will operate at 2 levels higher for 24 turns.
Yeah.
So that 24% for the Great Work Heist, provided there was a Great Work to steal, your spy is going to go up by 2 levels. So that 24% is going to go up by whatever percentage per level means that you would get 2 shots at stealing within that boosted time frame. I'd much rather force you to have a spy in the city doing that gain source mission while a different spy was trying to do something, because I think it may be a little too easy.
In our YouTube chat, because of course we stream these recordings live every other Saturday at noon Eastern Time in North America. PP, so what I want to know is building specific, i.e. you can only steal the great works in a theater district, but palace great works are off limits. I have the answer for you. We will find out the answer on, wait a minute, I'm just going to come up with this date just right now, October 21st, 2016.
gee, I wonder when that is.
Well, and, no, I think what he's saying is actually true. Can you only steal great works from the theater district, but palace great works are offline? Well, I would suggest if your capital, with the palace, does not have a theater district, then just by that look of that screenshot, any great work that's sitting in your palace would be protected.
I would like to also think that maybe they put something in there that's like, okay, if you have a great work in the palace, I don't know, maybe you can't store as many in the palace, but they're more secure because it's in the palace as opposed to out in the theater district somewhere.
Well, I think the theater district has, like, buildings that hold great works. And so
all right, so more secure in the palace. Yeah, more secure in the palace than they would be in those buildings in the district.
I feel like this is the first version of Base Civ I can remember that has espionage in it, which makes it feel more full, allows espionage to tie into all these systems instead of feeling like it was kind of added on later, so it feels more like an add-on. Seems like they've done so much work with Civ 6 to make it the causes of war. So you don't have to declare war, but you can start doing all these things that can give reasons for war, and that's just really ingrained at that base level of the game, which is really cool.
Oh, and on the tech side, you don't steal a tech, but rather you would steal the Eureka boost if you don't have it. So even there, you can't just run around with your spies hitting the highest tech level Civ and just steal your way up the tech tree.
Well, and it's like they're adding culture to the espionage aspect. I don't recall there being much cultural activities for spies.
There wasn't Civ 4.
Yeah, well.
Late in the cycle, people found out that that's actually the fastest possible way to win culture is through the espionage missions.
And also in Civ 4, wasn't it if you disabled espionage, then a lot of its
Effects would go to culture.
Oh, and of course, I think it was also implied on the mega panel, because, of course, almost as soon as they mentioned espionage, Catherine of France is mentioned again. So Firaxis' message is if you want to do anything with espionage, you need to play as France. After espionage was discussion of religion, and Brian Fledge has referred to religious combat as faith nukes. That in religious combat, of course, previous also acknowledging the religious victory again, but in the religious combat, which got applause, there is a 10-tile radius that is affected through religious combat.
Yeah.
So I'm like, whoa, wait, did he just say 10? 1-0? I'm not certain I can count that high, first off. But I'm fine.
Well, we all know that, but still.
That does sound like a religious nuke.
Yeah. That could be problematic, depending on the power of the nuke religiously. Like, what happens when they eat each other up? Because, you know, you just get a couple easy kills on some of their missionaries or apostles or whatever, and then all of a sudden there's no religion anywhere? That would suck. If it's like Civ 5, then there will be Pantheon people as well. So it won't be, as soon as you get a religion, there's, you know, religious people and religious people. There'll still be the Pantheon slash not major religion people. So if you're nuking for 10 hexes, I would probably suggest it'd be really easy to break somebody of their religion if they haven't 100% converted all their cities. And that could be a problem.
I've just got this vision of trying to bait AI apostles. Okay, let's have this combat. No, follow me. Let's move away from the cities. Let's move away from the cities. Let's go into the middle of the ocean. Yep, yep. Come on, let's go.
It is so cool that it's a little more active than previous interpolations of prophets going around and spreading religion, that they do get to get out there, and it's more of a gamified version of that system where you do see them have battle with each other, and the winner gets a big reward. So that seems like it could be a lot of fun.
And also, if that jerk Earth AI sends their 8 freaking missionaries to cover your land because it's the first city they found of yours and they want to convert it, then, yeah, you can go kill them without declaring war.
Now when I get that missionary sim, I can literally get them off my lawn instead of just having to go, could you not?
In Civilization VI, you will not only be fighting for your body, but also your soul. There you go. Okay. There's the tagline for you.
Okay, well, please never work like... in marketing.
In a related video that we're going to be talking about that actually looked at religion specifically, the latest live stream, they showed that their religion was called Odinism. So I'm pretty sure that's telling us that we can, in fact, name our religion, and that was the most important piece of information we learned about religion.
What can do with that?
Odinism is just part of the game, lol.
Exactly.
Odinism is part of the game, huh?
Yeah. If I couldn't make Condorism, then forget about this religion mechanic. I don't care. It's irrelevant.
Yeah.
Cool.
And speaking of air quotes cool, tying into the next topic, it was described as quote-unquote the most requested civ for Civilization V. They didn't say how they actually came to that determination. I'm not certain I even anecdotally agree with that. But we now get to the quote-unquote big reveal from the Firaxis Mega Panel, which I suppose is what made this a Mega Panel, or at least the closest thing we can get to actually saying that it should be rightly called a Mega Panel.
Some guy in the office every day, like 3 times a day, hey, can we add this div? Hey, can we add this div? Hey, can we add this div?
guys, can we have Congo? Can we have Congo? Can we have Congo? Congo! So, unique ability. Each relic, artifact, and great work of sculpture gets food, production, and gold. Speaking of people who want to go steal stuff.
Yeah.
And they also get extra great artists and great merchant points.
One of the things that got clarified in the interview with Sarah and Brian is actually double. So you still need to generate them properly, like get your theaters and commerce districts. But once you have those, you get double.
That's, wow. That's good, but that still may be slightly OP.
Sarah Darney had made that clarification in the video that Matt's referring to. And she said you get double great person points earned every turn for a lot, quote unquote, of them. So, we don't know exactly which great people we're talking about here, but yeah, in the description about when it was before just bonus great artist and great merchant, if I'm hearing bonus, then I'm thinking you're already generating something. Like, you're not going to get a bonus for nothing. You would get more based on what you were already producing. But yeah, you're going to get double. Again, whatever great people we're talking about here, this sounds nice.
Well, the obvious one is it's the Geoms, so great writer, artist, musician, because those are always grouped together. Because it's all theater-based, right?
Bonus other for artifact and great work. So yeah, it's all culture, so it would make sense. It would make sense that we're definitely talking about those at the very least.
How many African civs has there been in the game now? I know Egypt, and then I think...
Mali.
Mali, and now Congo, and then, of course, Zulu. Like, it's the most underrepresented continent besides Australia.
Well,
speaking of mods, you can get this done. Australia mod.
Well, no. Everyone knows the most underrepresented continent is actually Antarctica.
Technically, yes, but there hasn't been a Civ that didn't already exist that went to Antarctica. You know, no Civ evolved on Antarctica that we've ever heard of.
The Emperor Penguins will come for you.
Pretty sure Technicality is my middle name, so, you know, I got to be true to my name.
Carthage, Morocco.
Yeah. So there's been some reference there. Okay. Yeah. There's also their unique unit is a swordsman replacement that I'm not going to try and pronounce that. We already know I don't know how to pronounce normal words or normal words. That's terrible. Sorry. I'm used to. How about that?
Nagol Mbeba. There we go. I'll take the hit for the mispronunciation this time.
All right, then. They have extra defense versus ranged attacks, and neither woods nor rainforest slow them down or block the site, and they don't need iron.
Yay!
They're going to be able to put the hell over everything.
So, they're the new Mohawk warriors that the Iroquois had in Sifai.
Basically, yeah. Even if you consider the extra defense versus ranged attacks, that being not having the line of sight block and being able to keep moving is pretty strong.
Also, that's another one they talked about in the interview video, is that because of the movement, and this is actually somebody who may have actually known something about the game because they actually asked relevant questions, because of the movement change where you actually need the movement points to get into a tile, a lot of people on the forums are very accurately suggesting ranged units are now going to be like brutally overpowered, unlike in Civ 5 where they're just like severely overpowered because of this movement change. These swordsmen get that extra bonus versus ranged attacks independent of their promotion tree for melee units, which I can't remember if we actually seen some of the promotions in there, but I would assume that there's another one in ranged attack bonus in there anyways, because that would only make sense. Even though they can't necessarily get into the hex right away if they move to go after the archer or whatever ranged unit is there, they'll at least be slightly more protected than others and will survive long enough to get them. Plus, if they're trying to hide in woods or rainforest, then they would just be able to run right through the ranged units.
Run right out to them and go, oh, hi.
Yeah. Oh, hi, you die now. Bye-bye.
Unless Congo spawns in, like, a grassland area with no jungles, no forests, then otherwise they're going to take...
Oh, yeah. Disable start bias. Sounds good.
Yeah. Now, I have a feeling they and Brazil will be fighting over the better rainforest territory.
Mm-hmm.
Start bias.
Do we know if Civ 6 will have start bias on there? Are they trying to place Civs in regions that they're accustomed to?
I don't
know.
Well,
I mean, Civ 5 did it. Same people are designing it, so I would assume that they're not going to, like, gank people like they did with... Well, I mean, they kept ganking Rome. Like, I'm going to play Rome! Oh, look, there's no iron on the map! Yay!
And I would say also at this point, everybody's used to having that for the more resource-specific type Civs like that. So if they didn't have it, everybody would be like, where's my start bias? Love that!
My great naval Civ that has never seen the ocean.
Yeah.
Oh, crap, it's a lake.
We rule this lake, though.
Totally.
All right, so they've also got pricing for the neighborhoods that can be built earlier, provides housing, food, and gold. So, okay, you can start growing faster, basically.
No one mentioned anywhere what the tax or whatever is. I think neighborhoods are actually in the civic tree.
Yes.
Way up in the industrial era, maybe, somewhere.
Yeah, at urbanization.
Yeah, there you go. So can be built earlier would be good to know how earlier. But key point on that is from looking at all the screenshots, rainforests seem to be kind of key. They seem to be placed mostly on foresty rain stuff.
Yeah. We would like to remind you.
Would that be a rainforest?
Maybe.
As if you didn't need enough reason to keep your rainforests around. By the way, don't get rid of them. Don't chop them, okay?
Yeah.
Unless the Congo's your enemy.
Oh, well.
Then burn it all down. But also, since they also provide food and gold, that kind of makes up for taking up the rainforest tax. Because there's decent food coming out of rainforests, seemingly.
And also, speaking of things that came up in the interview on PC Gamer, but wasn't included in the first look, or at least I don't think it was included in the first look, the agenda for Congo, which, of course, is a tie to the leader, which Ben was also kind of mentioned in the chat, seeing as how there are no holy sites available for Congo.
What?
They can't found a religion either.
They kind of want all the religions to come to you, and their agenda is, guess what? They want your religion. Oh.
Yeah. Wow, we found the one AI Sith that's not going to mind if you send a flood of missionaries to their doorstep.
Yep.
You can't found a religion. You need something.
Please give me your religion. And I'm betting there's a flip side to that, since most of the agendas seem to have flip sides.
Yes, there must be.
If you don't give them your religion, they'll probably get mad at you.
Well, they'll come get it.
Yeah. Give me your religion or else.
Those look great.
Yeah, so to continue on, the leader unique ability is can't build holy sites and can't found a religion. So people who are talking about, oh, well, they'll just build Stonehenge and get a religion that way. No, they won't.
No, not at all.
Get
the belief of the religions that come to, or the one that establishes itself in a majority.
Yeah, so the founder beliefs, which are nicer than the follower beliefs, one would hope anyways. Also, they get an apostle each time they finish a Mabanza and a theater district of that city.
Well, if you spread to Congo, then they can spread it for you?
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm.
Each time, even. You want to see a flood of apostles? Hey, look, I need more housing. Ooh, free apostle. Oh, look, I need more housing. Free apostle. Yeah, that could get ugly. Pretty quick.
Well, I'll just video who you are.
But the good news about that is it's of the city's religion. So if you have some jerk who's not bothered improving their religion on one side of you, but still spread it to you, and then you have somebody who actually has a decent religion on the other side, you can take that decent religion one and spread it through your cities, because you'll get all these apostles, and then get rid of the other crappy one.
Well, it also sounds like a way to get involved in religious combat, too. Woo!
Yeah, but my only problem is, since it's not your religion, if you use all those apostles to go spread the religion, you may be handing somebody else a religious victory.
Yeah, it sounds like you don't want to play Congo if you want to play a religion game, but you want to play with Congo if you're playing a religion game.
Yeah, if Congo's your neighbor, you have the bestest friend in the world. Big thing in here that people kind of picked up on, and it's kind of weird, the unique ability for the sieve is that you get the bonus food production, blah, 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 from relics, archaeology stuff, and sculptures. Except sculptures are pretty obvious. You get those through great artists or whatever. Artifacts, obviously, go dig up stuff, no problem. Relics, that seems like it might be an issue. It's part of the unique ability, but since you can't build holy sites, where are you putting those things?
Filling everybody else's.
Well, no, but where are you going to put it into yours?
Unless there is a building or something that has the ability that we don't know about yet.
One assumes that...
I mean, why couldn't you store a relic in a museum or something?
Good. I don't think we've ever seen one like that.
This podcast has been going our way. What about your way?
Ow. By the way,
Nyarway.
Nyarway.
We're going to do this right meow.
Right now.
We shall go, I guess, with bad puns in tow.
A Viking we shall go, a Viking we shall go, burn all your crap down, a Viking we shall go.
Yeah, they get the ability to enter ocean early, they have berserkers, which are better on offense and defense. All the ships can coastal raid for
speed.
All right.
Yeah, because they're going to be a lot of fun to be near. Ha! They can embark and disembark at no cost. So, yeah, it's pretty handy.
Yeah.
With that, of course, comes one of their unique units.
Is it a berserker?
Well, there's that, but there's also
a boat. Leader unique.
A boat.
We're on boats.
Yes. Herald
on a boat.
Ships.
Yes.
So keeping in mind that because it's a split between the unique ability and the non-unique ability, the leader unique ability is that the melee ships can pillage adjacent land tiles, so coastal raiding, plus long ships, which can also heal in neutral territory. Which means if there's a different leader, they won't be doing that. But they'll still, the other leader would still have the berserker and the stave church, which you didn't mention.
No, I didn't mention it. Something about adjacency bonus, faith, and forest and crap, but nobody really cares about that. We're going to Viking.
So what do you guys think about putting cities next to coasts, right? So this opens you up to exposure to Viking raids.
Oh, well, now I have the choice to not be on the coast.
It always had its drawbacks in previous sets, such as the forking tactic in 4 or frigates in 5, which you better have enough coastal cities to build frigates yourself and have iron if you're going to do that.
Yeah, but in Civ 6, you don't need to have your city on the coast to be able to build boats anymore.
That's yeah,
true,
but then
the
you
Vikings
would have to have
still
a harbor.
Roll up and pillage you.
Yeah.
Yeah, if the Vikings pop up and wreck your harbor, you're not building boats anymore.
Yeah.
But that's the other thing. If you put the city on the coast and say it's just a one-hex water connection to your city, then they can only get one melee ship in there. And then depending on land, like a range ship or two. But if, say, you put your city back like 2 to 3 hexes so that it's not within shooting range of the coast, that just means you now have a lot more improvements and districts on the coast that are not your city center that they could just pillage instead.
That makes sense. I also love the new siege mechanic. If you have the city surrounded, it cuts off healing in the city, and that's harder to do if some of the tiles beside it are water tiles. So then they have to bring boats and melee units. That's really cool. So it's harder to siege a city on the coast.
Yep. Easier if it's hugging a mountain. But yes, harder if it's not. Then again, you can always just send the berserkers in to pop out of the water, just like in Civ 5, and go mass pillaging.
Yeah, who doesn't want to attack things with berserkers, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Just don't try and defend with them too much.
Nope.
It sounds like the only defense against them is to be their diplomatic ally.
You could just attack them. A lot of their bonuses go away when you're on the offensive.
Oh, really?
Like, the berserkers are only strong on the attack, not on the defense. And if you're putting pressure on them, then they can't coastal raid you the same way. I'm talking if you have a sea presence.
Yeah. Or just be so inland that their
embarking
and sea presence is completely neutralized because you're not on the coast. No real mention of the agenda for Norway.
I had seen or read otherwise that Harald here, he wants to build a strong navy, respects those with a strong navy, and dislikes those without a strong navy.
Dislike other Vikings, gotcha.
There are people that are... So, do you have a lot of undefended coastal cities, or what?
What's the thing? Well, it could be
or just land-based, right? He's not going to like people that are not coastal.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, you have a big navy, so I can't raid you as easy. But you have no navy. I'm going to target you.
You don't have a navy. Hi there.
How you doing? Lots of pillaging, and there's stuff in the civic tree for boosting pillage stuff. So, yes, the whole smashing somebody's entire empire without actually taking a city is kind of Norway's thing.
And we have seen about, for example, that your ships can get the boarding promotion, or you obtain gold from naval victories, or the loot promotion, plus 50 gold from coastal raids. So that's just, they already want to come onto your shores and take all of your stuff. As soon as they research shipbuilding, their units can enter ocean tiles, like they're a Polynesian.
Yep.
So,
the ship now belongs to Norway.
Yeah, so it's good to know, A, if Norway is in your game, if you're not Norway, and B, where the heck they are. So you can be looking out for their arrival.
I could see if, say, on a continent's map, two landmasses, Norway goes and plays nice with the people on their own continent and just ships all their longships off to the other continent to mass pillage and destroy.
Hmm.
Yeah, we need to go to other continents because we don't have short ships. We have long ships. So we got to go.
Exactly.
Well, that kind of mirrors
history.
What
are they going to do about it? And if your ships get hurt, you just go back into the ocean. They won't be able to go into the ocean to follow you.
Sounds lovely to go against.
I'm telling you to take this ship with a ton of holes without into deep water. It's a great idea, guys.
And I know we've mentioned it on the show before, but it's worth mentioning, and Pete P. in the chat reminds us, the resources gained from pillaging is improvement district-specific. So if you find a theater district, get culture. Find a holy site, gain faith. I guess if you go to, like, a commercial hub or whatever, then I guess you're going to gain gold. Gosh.
It seems so weird that you pillage a holy site to get faith. You know what? I feel more faithful now that we've burnt down that church. That seems great.
Well, yeah, we've gotten rid of the unbelievers.
We've cleansed the heretics, yeah. It's just cleansing.
That's how it works.
Yeah, that was a good cleansing, guys. Woo!
Yeah.
I feel so much more faithful now.
Man, I feel like I've lost like 5 pounds. Oh, wait, that's another credit cleansing. Okay, well.
Damn.
So we have our Vikings back, and they seem way better than Civ 5's version.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure. They might want to go for like a cultural victory. Their offensive capabilities seem very limited at crippling and robbing other countries rather than wiping other countries out.
Yep. The way to get to that wonder is burn the other person's down before they can build it. You got no production, you can't build it.
They're more of a slow everybody else down than a steamroll sieve.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of a less of a, okay, I think I'm going to go and I'm going to take this civ. Yep, this comet's going to go great. Oh, crap, whatever reason. Oh, there are all the other units. Oh, I've already declared war. Well, I guess I better hightail it out of here and just lick my wounds, which might actually be able to still come out ahead as compared to not engaging in the war. If you, in addition to denying them a lot of their improvements, you gain something from their improvements other than, quote-unquote, just the gold. You've stolen their fun. Once again, you've stolen their fun.
Yep.
And it's kind of interesting that depending on who their neighbor's with, who they're raiding, is kind of going to push their path. So if they're against somebody who's, or they're right beside somebody who's very faithful and is building a lot of temple districts, then they're going to be getting a lot of faith by raiding those temple districts, and it's going to push them to be more faithful. If they're right next to somebody who's building a lot of merchant hubs, then they're going to be getting lots of gold. So your neighbors kind of decide the direction you're going to grow in.
Well, I mean, you could also use all that excess faith to migrate people.
Yeah.
You don't have to go the religious path necessarily with Norway to still be able to use all that excess faith from burning down all the religious weirdos.
Heathens!
Filthy heathens.
Exactly. I was going to say, speaking of filthy heathens, wait, no. Relatedly.
What?
I'm just on a roll with the segues today, I tell you what. Beep, beep. There was a Paraxis live stream of Religion for Civilization 6, and guess what? You can watch the entirety of this live stream, unlike the previous live stream, for some reason still not available, from this live stream with Ed Designer for Civilization 6, Ed Beach. He's not dead, okay? Or anything else that some other people thought, okay? And, of course, Anton Stranger as well. At one point, they're moving Norway's units, specifically the longships, outside of Japanese territory. Hojo contacts them and asks them to move away. And I didn't notice it before, but there's this third option. Ignore this request. So you don't have to. You can respond with a non-response. And Ed's response was, we will respond, instead of through diplomatic channels, through militaristic channels, by actually declaring war and moving units into their territory. I absolutely love this. And we also got from this, as well as the Spain video afterwards, as much as there was the religious combat, I was enjoying finding out about the different type of wars that you can get through Casus Bellis, which was incredible. Yeah. With Norway, they could have declared a surprise war, which was warmonger penalties are increased by 50%, but this time they decided to declare a formal war because they had denounced Japan at least five turns prior. So you can start to set up, I want to declare war on this person, but you know what? Having warmonger penalties decreased, or at least not increased, sounds like a really good idea. It's a little bit more planning. And Charles, I'm sure you can
really
go ahead.
Cool.
I suppose if you think you're going to be able to wipe them out in a turn or two, maybe you're not going to be worried about warmonger penalty or war weariness within your civilization even, but it's nice to have that choice. That war is not, quote-unquote, just war.
Yeah, I think that can be expanded on, too.
Yeah, or it's, I mean, with that choice of, oh, I'm just passing through, or, haha, I should declare war on you. In Civ 5, you had no choice that you had to pick the declare war. Yeah. Otherwise, you lied and everybody hated you. In
that
this case,
too.
It's like, just shut up, dude. I'll declare war on you when I feel like it.
To have a middle option.
Yeah, yes. It's a fine line there between wanting to do whatever you want to do. I want to declare war on him, and I want to do it because I want his iron. And yes, I know there's no good reason for that, but I feel like that should be a viable game option. And still wanting to feel like diplomacy should have value, and for diplomacy to have value, just doing whatever I want whenever I want to should have consequences. So this is a really good mix.
Yeah, this is the nice, like, just say you did denounce him, say, four turns ago, and it takes five turns before you can actually formally declare, and they call you on your army, you know, on that fourth turn. The difference between getting forced into surprise war, which would probably be what it was if you when they asked about your units and you said, okay, let's declare war, versus just waiting till your turn rolls around to be able to declare that formal war, that ignore.
The, oh, by the
it,
way,
it's
you're
really
wrong.
Nice. Yeah.
It also changes it from just feeling like I'm playing those three horsemen that I see on the other side of the fence or working around that mountain, too. Now I'm really competing against Hojo, and I'm competing against Peter. You know, those people, they're remembering what I'm doing. They have their own agendas that they're pursuing, and those are the people I'm competing against.
Yeah, and hopefully, unlike in Civ 5, where whenever an AI asked you about something, no matter what you said, was completely and utterly ignored because the game didn't even have code behind it, hopefully three choices actually have code behind it. So, yes, you might ignore them, but hopefully they actually get a little cranky that you ignored them and react accordingly. Like, they know the word.
You, I'm the great Emperor Hojo. Why did you ignore me?
Although, if AI in Civ 6 is like Civ 5 and you just move one scout to their border and they prompt you, they're like, hey, I see your troops. Then when you do declare war with just your one scout, then it can truly be a surprise war.
What?
Yeah. Surprise.
What? It'd be a really surprise war for that scout.
It's like a war. With the multiple war types, I see a lot of room to grow as well. There could be wars where you don't want to aggress at all, and you declare a type of war that's a defensive posture. There's so much opportunity with this kind of mechanic.
You're bullying my city-state, and that gives me a justifiable war.
Yeah, Dan.
Yeah, Dan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Wait, why am I being singled out here all of a sudden? What?
Dan.
We all know you're the bully.
Yep.
It's okay.
City-states wonders why he's being singled out. Hmm.
Oh, that.
Denial is my department.
Oh, but that's not in Civ 6, I don't think. I haven't seen any evidence I can actually bully city-states for gold, so,
find a way.
Yep.
Tony's going to mod that in for me in Civ 6 so I can bully city states for gold. Thanks, Tony. Appreciate that.
And then don't forget to let us declare war on him for doing it.
Tony returns to Civ modding. You heard it here.
Thanks, Dan.
I'm going
to
be honest.
There.
I'm looking at Civ 6, and I kind of left the Civ community around Civ 5. I mean, not really much of a coincidence. But Civ 6, I'm actually starting to get stoked again. It looks like they finished Civ 5, actually.
All right, so Tony, let me fill up your modding to-do list for you. All right, thanks.
Quebec has to be first. Make sure there's Quebec.
Elsewise, from the video again, I know the focus was on religious combat, and we actually did get to see some religious combat when Ed took over the helm of playing the game, because Anton was at the helm for Norway. And then with the Spanish game, we got a chance to see the other... I should say there's some other war types that come up when you get to diplomatic service, which is in the civic tree. So all of these aren't available right from the beginning of the game. We've got the Holy War. So a power has religiously converted one of your cities. So if they convert one of your cities, you can declare a Holy War and all warmonger penalties are halved. Whoa.
Yay. Ooh.
Yeah, go ahead and send that missionary here. Go ahead, do it.
I double triple dare you.
Yes, thank you.
Here, let me back off my apostle so you can bring in your missionary, your own apostle, and do that without any problems.
The two guys come to your doorstep, and you're like, you open the door slowly for them. Come on in. Tell me about your religion.
You know what? I've converted to you. If you'll wait just here, I just need to make a quick call. I'll be right back. No, don't go anywhere. It's good. Liberation War. A power has captured a city from one of your friends or allies, so there's no warmonger penalty for capturing those cities. Although I would assume the idea being that when you capture those cities, you actually liberate them. I just got this feeling, hey, I'm declaring a liberation war. You know what? My friend and ally, I was really jealous of them having this city. I don't want to give it back. I went all the effort to recapture it. So you know what? I'm actually holding on to it. Liberation war, psych!
Well, you know, I immediately coming to mind is it would be so unfortunate if after declaring this liberation war, your ally were to die completely. So I guess there's no one to give the city back to now.
Oh, I mean, if it's like Civ 5, you could liberate, say, city-states.
You can, but that's existence. Just the capital, right? So you could take other cities, because that doesn't exist any longer.
Yeah, I guess it depends on if they modified Civ 5's liberation code, or if they left it alone. I would hope that they're going to put a whole thing in here that you're going to have the ability to, like, liberate any city back to anybody.
So I don't understand that. When I don't have any war penalty for those cities, that implies that I took the city back and I'm holding it, but I have it.
No, you would
maybe
have
just
to
give it back right away when you take it.
Yeah.
Maybe it forces you to actually give it back automatically.
Because there's too many ways in multiplayer people would screw each other up with that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Hey, want to be my ally? Okay. Okay, guys, kill them.
You've made that decision to have them liberated as you declare war, not making the decision, okay, now I've captured the city. Now what am I going to do? Am I going to keep it or not? Protectorate War. A power has attacked one of your allied city-states. No penalty for liberating that city-state. So I guess that means that in the Protectorate War, if they attack one of my city-state allies but they haven't taken it yet, then I'm just at war with them and there's really no impact, like warmonger penalty. In other words, it's a Protectorate War, but until if and when the allied city-state is actually captured, then it's just your standard war?
Well, I mean, it probably means that you're going to war to go smash their armies. And as long as that's the only thing you're doing, then everybody's cool with that. Until they give up the war with the city.
Oh, if you start taking that other Civ cities and everybody goes, oh, wait a minute now.
Yeah, now you're going a little far.
I'm just protecting my interests.
The addendum to that would be if that other civ had actually taken the city-state out before you got there, you would be able to liberate it and no one would care.
Oh, yes. I'm just trying to find a way to exploit these things before the game is released. I mean,
Damn, Munchkin.
This is Civ, so even if people do care, you're not going to care that they don't care, because they're going to hate you anyway.
Yeah, probably.
They will find another reason to hate you, like your Civ is more awesome.
The final point, which is the diplomatic service on the civic tree, there's also a reconquest war. What? A power has captured one of your cities? No warmonger penalties apply when you declare reconquest war, but it didn't say no warmonger penalties apply when you take that city back. So I'm going to declare reconquest war. I'm going to get my civ back. I have no warmonger penalties. I'm now going to wipe you out. So please, please, let me move my units away. Come take the city. Come on. Come on. Yep, take my city. Yep.
What hope they understand the nuance between reconquesting one of your cities and conquering somebody else's.
One would hope, yes, but it doesn't guarantee anything now, does it?
Yeah.
I assume that these diplomatic penalties that are imposed upon you by other civilizations when you declare war. So when it says you get no penalties, it means that when everybody else is looking at you, they're like, yeah, I'm not judging you poorly for that. You don't get any diplomatic hit for having declared war if they had one of your cities.
That does make sense. It's a question of what people will look at you for declaring the war in the first place and be separate from actually taking of cities and the separate warmongering type penalties that you get when you actually take a city.
And different than actual war weariness for your actual people who may get tired of war, even though you had a very legitimate reason to declare it.
Yep.
So hopefully that is in fact what it means.
Yeah, so there you go. That's your whole goal for the Protectorate War. Go protect your city-state, kill all the enemy's armies, and then their people would get so upset that they are fighting this war that they'll give up.
But they're never going to give you up. Never going to run out. Oh, okay.
Rick.
I knew we gave up too much time there. It was incredible.
Yeah, too much empty space.
I was deciding whether I was going to say it, and I thought, of course I'm going to say it. I'm me.
Usually we have too much time on our hands.
We also got to see from this, I believe he was contacting Washington. It was contacting Washington in Spain, where poor Washington is just has their one city left, their capital, or in Turncast terms, capital. China has taken all of their other cities. Ed moves to have a look at the diplomatic relations, and he's got enough of a relationship status that we can actually see what some of these values mean. So we actually see like -3 this and +10 that. So of course I'm immediately, a bit more like Civ 4 than Civilization 5. Excellent. We've got years at peace, settling near them, sent delegation, different governments, moving forces near their cities, keep diplomatic promises, troops at border, and my favorite one on the list is first impressions. What a human thing to include. This is great. Is this going to be the equivalent of, you're trying to win the game the same way I am? And as long as it doesn't
work. That was nice before, but it was a hidden modifier. One of the ones that showed the modifiers, just put first impressions are a lasting one for that.
So I hope what it means is that it's first impressions. They might have gotten some intel from another civ that they met about this faraway civ that they haven't met yet, but their first impressions are based on, we have actually met you in the game and we can talk to you, and now these are our first impressions. Like, are they really going to base it on like that one turn first?
You're actually a jerk.
Yeah, is it going to be based on like that first impression?
Yeah, we know you're a jerk.
Now that we see your face,
it reminds me of someone I don't like.
Yeah, pretty much.
-7.
Nope.
I just assume Cleopatra just gets +5 in first impressions. Just always awesome.
Just a matter for.
Well, I mean, it could be related to their agenda too, right? So let's say that Cleo likes big militaries and she can't lie. she meets you for the first time and finds out that the only thing you have is a scout. Maybe that's the super negative right off the mark. You know what? You're weak. I don't like weak. Go away.
We'll see what you think after I declare a surprise war with the scout, I tell you what.
Yeah, I hope you don't like work.
I'm pretty sure Cleo's not impressed by surprise wars either.
Well, especially not
I don't know.
Her.
She might be into that sort of thing.
Oh, that's her hidden agenda item in that game.
Yep.
Oh, nice.
Like surprise wars.
Yep.
It would be amusing to have one civ who, like, anyone who would give warmonger hate towards you, like, it's inverted for that. So, like, you start off hating you because you've been at peace, but as you declare war on people, they like you more and more.
We think the Vikings are great neighbors.
Yeah. So they keep raiding us.
If we do get the Zulus, that's going to totally be them. Like, all right, you're killing people. We like that. Keep it up.
Yeah. That would be great. Minus 10, you're a peacemonger. What?
Yeah. People are so overrated.
Why you no war?
I'm not saying it's a good idea. It's just an amusing idea.
Yeah, and then you declare war on them, and then they're like, wow, you finally declared war. I like this. But wait, you declared war on me. I'm so conflicted.
They like it, but they're still going to kill you.
Firaxis also released some information on one of their new civilizations, which is Greece, which looks awesome to me. The leader is Pericles, and he does have a shag growth staple to his face. That's perfect. Actually, it's an amazingly great beard. I love it.
Oh, what? That's Pericles? I thought that was Santa Claus. Oh, man.
Santa Claus.
Ho, ho, ho.
He has a shiny gold helmet and a scroll for some reason, so that's kind of cool.
The helmet is wrong. Didn't you know it's the wrong Corinthian helmet?
Yeah.
Sure.
Oh, there was a third helmet, wasn't there?
Yeah.
I think I remember seeing something like that.
I don't know why Mackie's moaning. I mean, this game is about historical accuracy.
That's right. The one thing not mentioned in this Grease First Look video is Gorgo. Amusingly not there. And that led to a lot of questions, like, where'd Gorgo go?
The Greeks are really cool. They have a couple special abilities. The one I am most interested in is they get a free wild proficiency, wild policy card.
Well, that is proficient. That is proficient. It's all good.
Hello.
Wild policies on your government type, you can put anything in there. So they get a bonus one right from the start, which is fantastic. Allows their government to be a lot more flexible than any of the other civilizations. And also, since you can switch those out, you can adopt and change your government policies as you go.
So my interpretation of that is when you start the game, what's the base government type that gives you no special anything? Is it chieftain, is it?
Chieftain? Chieftain something or other.
Yeah. Okay, so in Greece, you have chieftain plus. We know 2K likes their plus with the Civilization Revolution. I'm just throwing that out there. It's chieftain plus.
For me, there's always that one policy that I want that's like, oh, I like everything I have, but just one more. Just give me one more, and I can just throw this in there. It also makes me wonder what kind of crazy combinations I'm going to be able to make in my government type.
Yep, cool. Also, I mean, Germany also gets an extra policy card, but it's militaristic only. So this one is more, because it could be a military card that you slot into the wild card slot, but it could also be everything else.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I suspect a lot of people are going to use it for government types to help with culture, because their second ability is surrounded by glory, and they get culture per turn for every city-state that they are suzerain over.
Yeah, and it looked like from the video people spotted it was 5%.
5% per city-state?
Yeah, and there's no other percentage bonuses in there for stuff.
Oh.
So that could be huge.
Yeah.
If you want to be buddies with the city-states and go be suzerain as many as possible, Greece is a great choice of a civilization to play as. Or if you want to go destroy all the city-states, then maybe you want to go talk to Germany.
I kind of want to find a cultural city-state in particular now.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
If you look at the early civic tree, mysticism has a couple wild card policies that can only go into a wild card slot, which means no other civ will be able to use those until they get up to the first level of actual governments that have the wild card slots. So Greece would be able to take those great scientist and great prophet cards and use it right away.
Yeah, you won't have to wait until political philosophy. When you do, you can adopt that and still be able to also have another wild card policy slot in addition to what else you get. So it keeps on going.
Definitely adds for a lot of flexibility.
And seeing as how you need culture to go through the civics tree, as Greece, you will be able to get to political philosophy arguably quicker than other civs, because you have got, especially if you've got city-state suzerain status with one or more, because you're going to get bonus culture from that. It's be like, okay, Greece, I finally caught up to you. I'm at political philosophy. But what took you so long? I'm already there. I've got another wild card spot policy, by the way. F you!
Obviously, with the city-state quests, Greece is going to be really focused on trying to cap those as quick as possible.
Right, for that suzerain bonus.
Yeah. So there's the other point. Political philosophy, you get two diplomatic cards that pop up right away. One is about the first envoy you sent to each city-state counts as two. So again, Greece wanting to play with city-states to
yep.
so get there a little faster if you didn't get anything before that point. And, of course, plus two charismatic leader for the plus two influence points per turn towards earning city-state envoys. So you could use your extra wildcard slot to put both of those in and then still do normal stuff that everybody does.
They have a special unit, the Hoplite, which has adjacency bonuses with other Hoplites that are around it. I saw some people in the forums were kind of down on the Hoplite. It is true that since it has to be another Hoplite unit, it's only going to be useful a short time period, you know, when the Hoplite is useful. So during that time period, it can be very powerful. But in the modern game and such, it's not going to give you any bonus. But I really love that they're using that adjacency bonus there because I want to make my wall of units and feel like, you know, there's some really strong benefit of doing that. So if I'm besieging your city with Hoplites all around it, not only am I cutting off your ability for your city to heal, but they're all giving plus 10 strength to each other, which I think could be a lot of fun.
And also that plus 10 strength helps completely negate the melee line's innate plus 10 versus spear units.
Especially for early game units, even though they're only powerful for that time, getting power early in the game just, what is the word?
Good.
If that gets you an extra city or two in the early game, so you get more with, that will just pay dividends in the later game. So getting especially those early game units really pay off for you.
Or you spam hoplites, the enemy spams temples, all of a sudden you get a religion.
Yeah. The other unique that they have is the unique district. It's a theater district that has to come on hills, and it got some bonuses that I don't remember off the top of my head.
Extra culture when near other districts, and a definite big extra culture if it's right next to the city center.
There were some frowny faces in the Civ community about the Acropolis having to be on a hill.
Hello.
That's like, I'm just like, well, you may want to prioritize settling where within three hexes you can have a hill.
This comes back to that wonderful talking point that we love to bring up. Unstacking.
Stacking cities!
Yay!
But in this case, it flips into where do you settle.
So you have to make decisions.
Yeah.
Dang.
And I like those limitations because it means you can make the advantage of having that bigger, right? So, yeah, it's nice having a little limitation there. So now on the balance side, they can balance for that by giving you a bigger bonus when you're next to your city center.
If there's no hills around, that also means your production's going to be crap.
There's that issue as well, although certainly if someone was like, well, hey, if I need the theater district to be able to get culture and I don't have any hills and I can't have the Acropolis, which is the theater district replacement, remember, your city states, you're getting bonus culture to which you are the suzerain of. So it's not like, oh, I don't have hills, I'm SOL. I think the point about production issues, oh, you could just say that for any civ, of course. Oh, I don't have a hill, now what the heck am I going to do? But yeah, there is that point.
I hadn't even thought about that. No, that's kind of brilliant that you can go either way for culture, as if go for the city-state route on it or the Acropolis.
Or better yet, both.
I mean, the biggest thing is in this game, production of culture is the monument, but without getting a theater district, that mid to late game culture civic tree is going to be really slow. As a source of culture, the theater district's kind of your big thing that you need to get going at some point.
It does make me a little sad not to see Alexander, who's one of my favorite leaders here. But
you know, in Civ 5, I wasn't as interested in Greece as I am now. So that I'd say they've improved Greece, in my opinion.
Yeah, a little bit.
The government system is really cool, so any civilization that lets you play with that and tweak that system is going to be a lot of fun.
Support the ongoing Polycast Patreon campaign.
Collective achievements.
Personal incentives.
Month-to-month commitment.
For more information, visit thepolycast.net/Patreon.
Call in today.
In North America, 301-637-7659.
In Europe, 441-228-8-7659.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
Log on to the series official website at
thepolycast.net.
You know what's interesting? The first time Tony was on Polycast and the first time Derek was on Polycast is when you were on Polycast together on episode 23.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I was listening to that one a few months ago.
I don't remember
way
that
way back.
That's over 10 years ago, or is that... Yeah, it's 10 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Almost. You guys are coming up on your 10-year anniversary.
Yep. The day Civ 6 is to be released is 10 years to the day the first Polycast episode was ever published.
Yep.
It is amazing. It's like we planned it or something.
Totally.
We're just having a podcast.
The implication is that I'm getting old, but...
No, what are you talking about, Tony? We were all 10 years old when this podcast started, so we're only 20, man. Life's just getting started.
Oh.
Yeah.
Does that explain my maturity level of the modcast?
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us for the 265th episode of Polycast. Today, we were joined by Makalua.
I need lunch now.
The me and team.
Working on the 20th anniversary in advance.
Dan Quick.
Suzerain.
No, Garrett. Dan.
Special guest host, Garrett Sazaka.
Yeah, make sure to ping me.
Mad Jen.
I'm not a guest. I should have been before that one.
Special not guest host.
Yeah. The special but not host.
Are you trying to say something? I know I just passed my 100th episode.
But imagine. Oh, that.
If we ever saw you playing Civ anymore, that would help.
No. Derek is only saying imagine best before 100 episodes.
Yeah, you reached your best by date.
Well, I'm going to Madrid, so screw y'all.
And me, Derek Kale Paxton. Thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, there's Mackie.
It's completely quiet.
Yeah, I know.
We decided you're going to do the whole podcast.
No, bye.
She actually disconnected. Briefly.
I think that would be amusing to have her try to
especially
do
if she did it in our voices. That'd be fantastic.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. She switches to, like, do her best impersonation of each of us.
I'm not that great at impressions.
I recommend making it as insulting as possible.
Yeah, not being good at it just makes it all the more enjoyable.
To just go herp, derp, derp all the time?
The cool part about Civ 6 versus Civ 5 and Civ 4 is unstacking the cities.
Yes, I did see
sorry,
that.
Sorry, I had to.
If you didn't add, I was going to, so.
Yeah.
I believe it's your first topic mention of unstacking.
They tell you I had like a third kid.
I think you mean the wife had the third kid, to say.
Well, I mean, I participated a small bit.
You participated a small bit. Okay, no, I'm sorry. That's terrible. It's actually.
This answers the question why so many religions come from desert regions. It's because people were sending their apostles there so that they could religion bomb and not affect the city. So the prophets would go into the deserts and they would have little desert battles.
Yep.
It all makes sense.
That's why you don't get any ocean-based religions, because every time they sent apostles there, they just drown.
Yeah. It all makes sense now.
Probably really likes being Caesarian of city-states. And decide to hate you if you, you know, kill them.
Then?
Or eat.
Or just compete with for their favor. Gosh.
Yeah, maybe.
And besides, as I've said before, Mackie, why would I be taking out city-states? Because if I take over a city-state, I can't bully them anymore. That's so fun. We have the bumper for the episode, by the way. Yep.
That quick, huh?
That's what she said.
Okay.
Sorry about that city-state theory. Sorry.
So I guess what Tony's telling us is that Kermit the Frog is Canadian. I had no idea.
Yes.
That explains so much.
These are being Quebecois.
So there's two leaders for Greece, and neither one of them are Alexander.
Exactly.
Yes. Okay.
Oh, they doubled down on the no Alex.
We can certainly make fun of each other during said game.
We don't have to wait for the 10th anniversary of the show to do that, Tony. I mean, yeah. Speaking of illegitimate.
Illegitimate.
Welcome to the world of wide world of streaming. Yeah, I can talk, really.
Oh god, we're live?
You didn't know that?
Dan did not tell you about this part.
No, Dan didn't tell me we were live. That's cool.
You don't have to record it.
Tony, my invitation for you to join this episode indicated that we live streamed, by the way.
Well, what if I don't read anything?
That's your problem.
Well, I mean, let's fine print anyway.
We'll just edit all this out. Just edit all this out.
Yeah, edit it out of your memory.
I will.
Too late. The internet has heard it all.
Too late to apologize. The internet's seen everything.
Record date?
September 17th, 2016.
Civilization 4, 5, and Beyond Earth's Sound Clips. Copyright Take 2 Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.